You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Michael Workman, founder of Visual Arts Network. Michael, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the Visual Art Network a little bit. Michael, can you tell me a little bit about how that was founded and how it operates?
Yep. The Visual Art Network is kind of an umbrella organization that I started to bring all the different art and curatorial projects that I was working on at the time under one umbrella. And that included shows that I'd been doing for a while, the mom and pop art fair and art exposition shows I'd been doing, and art email service and curatorial services. And it all of this kind of came out of a background of art criticism, where I started off at the New Art Examiner, which was an art magazine here in Chicago, that I got involved in as a literary English literature major, and started writing for art criticism for them. And so that's kind of the source of where all of that came from. We're talking about the Visual Art Network. And more, I've been kind of pulling away from doing that work these days and moving back now, kind of interestingly, into the literary world again. So to provide some context to it, that has been kind of the main work I've been putting my time into, the Visual Art Network, over the last 10 years. And that's kind of interestingly made another shift. So,
by this other shift, you were talking about the literary influence that's happening now, and I assume you're talking about doing more writing and local writing and other projects like that. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, being back at New City now and doing social criticism for them again, and writing a column on DIY culture, that kind of perspective has been, it's been very informing for me to go back to the literary world after having been involved in the art market at very high levels of operation and kind of seeing what the patronage system is doing to the reception and distribution of visual art as an industry. And it really has turned away from being a support system, which is what the patronage system is really originally sort of designed to be. And the global market around all that has changed dramatically. I think it's probably influenced the literary world to some lesser degree along those lines. But it's, you know, I think a lot of people like me who get involved because you see these art worlds or literary worlds as places of freedom, and you realize it's controlled by a market to some degree or another. You have to kind of find a way around that if you want to stay in a kind of zone of creative freedom. And that's what's happened now. I think you're seeing a lot of people leaving the art world.
Let's talk about that a little bit. That seems to segue into also your interest in DIY culture, if I'm reading what you're saying correctly. Let's talk a little bit about DIY culture.
I'm a student of Charles Taylor, and you know, he wrote The Ethics of Authenticity. Studied with him at Northwestern, and you know, they're visiting philosophers like Derrida, Habermas there, whose ideas were very much influencing my thinking when it comes to what it means to live authentically and to work authentically. And there's a history of all that, the idea of the self and how you construct it and how you choose to build yourself. And that I think that our institutions can sometimes move away from authenticity toward, you know, I think you're seeing a lot of kind of market forces. There was a big story recently about the prison divestiture. Was this at Columbia, if I remember correctly? You know, people are becoming interested in the kind of economics behind institutions and the ethics of that. And, you know, you're participating in the funding of a school that is putting money into private prisons as part of the investment, then you can have a voice in that. And so that for me, that artists were losing that voice in the art world. You know, they really were kind of becoming beholden. And I think that they were becoming beholden to the kind of heightened interest of the the patronage system behind it. And I think that, you know, you're making supply and demand work.
So is that where DIY culture comes in, though? Is DIY culture a reaction to that and trying
absolutely.
To work with
it? I mean, this goes back to, like, you know, this goes back to my youth. You know, when you're talking about counterculture, you're talking about in the 90s, it was Gen X culture, and these kind of backgrounds are informing the kind of popular thinking in many ways about what our future is about politically, what our future is about, you know, socially. And so that was informing me just to begin with. And then, of course, going back to, like, the study with Charles Taylor about, you know, making of the modern self or the ethics of authenticity, these kind of ideas, and how that relates to, for instance, the ascendance of science in the culture, you know, versus a kind of moralized way of looking at it that existed previously, like hierarchies of nature and these kind of things. That kind of shift you see taking place in the culture as well. And it's sort of a cycle, I would think, to some degree or another, of a generational movement. The millennials outnumber the baby boomers now. And, you know, there's a lot of influence coming from that wave, that generational wave, on things like gay marriage and some of these very topical issues today. So, I think these sea changes, and, you know, I felt adrift for a while there in the art world, because it was my show, the projects of the Visual Art Network, were getting steamrolled just the way, you know, Borders would steamroll all the independent bookstores, and the way Starbucks wouldn't steamroll all the indie coffee shops, you know.
Right.
The little mom and pop art fair projects got steamrolled by the Merchandise Mart and Ornato Realty and all these very well capitalized forces that want to monopolize the market. So it was very difficult to maintain. And, you know, I think that the art world can, in large part, especially the market, become an echo chamber of people just pushing for the attention and care of that patronage system. And it can get very, you know, whittled down to that, and not leave room for the larger culture to have a voice in it. So, I kind of recently did the last show of that project. I do an indie craft show in Chicago called Multiples, which is about the multiplicity of makers and maker culture. And, you know, that's the last thing I think really kind of running in terms of shows with the Visual Art Network at the moment. And so for me, this really is about returning to, like, writing, returning to reporting, and trying to record some of these cultural changes, because I think they're very important. And they're changing the world in front of our eyes right now. So.
And so tell me a little bit about what you see there. I mean, in terms of DIY culture around you, what are some examples that you see that you think are indicative of? A little bit what we're talking about, but maybe the times also that we're dealing with right now.
Yeah.
With the market and everything else, because all artists are having this kind of very strange dialogue with the market, a love-hate relationship. And I mean, I talk to people all over the world about this from different angles, and everybody has a different take on, you know, the influence of the market or the lack of influence of it.
Well, I think it's very clearly, it's very dangerously defining art these days. And I think people are reacting, as they should, negatively to that. And you have works that are securitized to for pensions and things like this in a way that they wouldn't allow in any other kind of, I think that there are, you know, real problems with the art, ethical, structural problems with the art world. Everything from chandelier bidding, which everybody knows is terrible, to the sort of get in line mentality behind a patron that the system, I think, has created the supply and demand of artwork. It's really run artwork on merit out of its purview. And So that current of what's going on with the art world overall, and the kind of people, the kind of waves of people leaving it, I think that that's a generational reaction to growing up with art that was being held out of the public domain in a way, very kind of taken out of that public sphere and put into the hands of the wealthy alone. That, and done in a way that was very kind of overtly, you know, we can rig the market.
Right.
Know, if it was Wall Street, we'd go to jail for this. You know, there's kind of like loathsome attitude going on around it that was just lacking in empathy. And I think, you know, if you're just going to say that art is a cultural good, you can't mean it's just a cultural good for a few people in the culture. It doesn't add up. And I think that's what happened, and that's what has happened, is that artists have taken what they've learned in the proliferating number of schools and programs that are out there and tried to make it. And they're making it in a way that's hurting the whole calling of making art. And so that DIY, that kind of attempt to recover, I think that it's really recover some human element of it is a really important thing that's happening. You know, I'm first and last a humanist. You know, I think that the American Humanist Association is, they have their rules up there and, you know, all these, not rules, but, you know, perspectives. And I do think that there's a charter that we're looking at, American Humanist Association. I first got involved with it through Kurt Vonnegut when I was a very young writer starting out, and he was the honorary president. I had interviewed him for a journal I was starting, and, you know, I looked into it then, and I just thought that that was exactly the kind of, I don't know, it went well with my, where I was philosophically, and has continued to nourish that thinking. And I think that the way the art market and the art world has syncopated in the last decade has resulted in me moving away from it because my philosophy doesn't jive with it anymore. So
that makes sense to me. I mean, I think you're talking about a certain generation too, right? There's the generation that you're talking about, people leaving the art world. What generation is that? That's your generation right now. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but also I think the millennial generation. I think that there's a more kind of open eye. You know, when I talk to people who are younger, and I've been kind of beating the pavement and going to local DIY spaces. Like there's one called the Dollhouse DIY here in Chicago. There's Triangle Space. There's Heaven Gallery. There are a number of these kind of art and maker spaces that aren't commercial at all. And this is, you know, Chicago has this really obviously rich tradition of these alt spaces, in gallery,
right,
going back. And that's, you know, there's a long tradition. It's very Glasgow in its approach. But, you know, it can be an idea lab when the market runs out of ideas. I think that that's something that Chicago has gotten known for. You know, there's a kind of approach here that can transform how the rest of the world works. Ideas on the ground, and you have artists like Esther Gates working here, attempting to make social art into a reality. And I think, so there are these kind of movements that are coming out of Chicago, and you know, I've been here for 20 years, so I'm very influenced by what's in the air here. And that long history of DIY and alternative spaces here is very present. It's become kind of scattered around the city, and you have to look for it. But that's part of it, I think, is finding your philosophical paramours, if you will, or people who you can discuss ideas with. And the reason I moved to Chicago to begin with. So,
right. Well, so this I mean, that seems, you know, there's different kind of movements happening, and at the same time, I mean, we're at this, you know, as you say, you know, particular time in history, or as I'm understanding it, with this relationship to the market that's shifting, and with artists contributing in ways that may not be so constructive as well as constructive, how is the artist that you're seeing in Chicago now contributing? Is there a shift happening there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In
yeah.
terms of contributing in ways that aren't helpful to the system, that are perhaps perpetuating the worst aspects of the the market.
Interestingly here, I mean, you have Expo Chicago, and it's its own thing. But I think, there's this whole kind of groundswell of new spaces and new, there's a kind of youth cultural ascendance again, right? With
right.
the kind of, with millennials coming of age. And they're very interested in authenticity. And it's interesting, if you grow up your whole life with these screens, which, our generation, I don't know how old you are, but my generation didn't grow up with screens, and this is Baudrillard, the screen cultural idea, and with the internet now, people really not had a life experience to the degree they, I think, are sort of, it's sort of dawning on them that, oh, there's a way of socializing out there that maybe we haven't explored. So, I think there's been a movement lately to kind of go off screen. I know people who are under 30 now who don't have Facebook pages anymore, which is kind of funny, but I do think that there's this yearning for authenticity, for an understanding of there's a whole generation looking for themselves, I think.
Right.
And that is, it's an important moment. And I think that to define what authenticity means for that generation, to be in, not just be like dismissive of it, like they're just on their phones all the time. I think that be engaged and knowing what they're experiencing with the technology, but also trying to give some human perspective that, I knew what it was like to grow up poor in the 1980s with a father that was working in a auto factory, and I think there's a whole swath of this generation that are also poor, but don't know that it changes. And so, I think that kind of talking about what the market does, and there's an essay I just put up on my page on Facebook not long ago that I'd published in a magazine in Chicago called Proximity, called The Problem with Art. And, in that I kind of talk about my experience working with the Merchandise Mart. They at one point attempted to buy out the Bridge Art Fair, which I was producing at the time. And in the essay, I kind of, walk through what happened with that. And Chris Kennedy was the head of the Merchandise Mart at the time. And there was a real pressure move, to sell or be thrown away. They wanted to monopolize the market. And, in the essay, I'm talking about the necessity to push back against that. And, I turned down a six-figure offer from them that would have left me sitting pretty. And, when the market crashed, I lost a lot of what happened, what I'd built up with the shows. But I think it was the right choice, because what happened is they just took they took the art world by the market, Bernardo Realty and some of their banking companies, and just blanded it, just made it bland as hell, and didn't bring any kind of curatorial perspective to it, and made people compete on that level, and it was just a horrible thing. And I think now you've got an art fair in every town, and there's no way that artists can keep up with the volume of it. My what I'm seeing here is people just disconnected from the market and really focused on making good artwork. And I think there's a whole future to look forward to of extraordinary new directions from artists. I'm very hopeful for that. But I think that there has to be an abandonment of the marketing of the contemporary art world for a while. I think that, we have to really get our heads out of the space that's been created by the market in that world, because it limits the thinking of artists and it limits the approaches they can take. I think that you have to have experience. You have to, you know, find what Goethe called the best education, I think. Just experience itself. Mm. Go out there and live. You know, I keep saying, go be poor somewhere and drink too much, you know, whatever. I just think that worrying about the career you have is not going to do it anymore. There's just so many people doing it. It's a glut. That's been a problem for a long time with visual art. You know, they kind of.
But I like that. It's coming back to more, as you're saying, it's more the life that you're actually living, you know.
That defines the work you're going to make. It's the self you construct or choose. And that's going to be the material of your work in some sense or another. You're going to draw from the ideas you metabolize from that experience. So, yeah, I think that it's important to make a break occasionally with the systems we build for ourselves and for our society. You know, I'm anti-foundationalist in that respect.
So. I agree. Well, I'm with you in that respect. And, Michael, I want to thank you for talking with us today. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I appreciate your time.
I really appreciate you having me. Thanks again.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.